I became excruciatingly depressed. I didn't have the thing that made my life worth living, which was my children. I was losing my marriage. I was losing my homeland. I was losing my faith and all the things that I used to do to support myself in that moment. So it was just devastating. And I became suicidal.
Welcome to the American Mother's Mom to Mom podcast, a show that lifts, encourages, supports, and educates mothers to do their best in their awesome responsibility to raise, teach, and champion the rising generation. Join us as we talk to and answer questions from mothers nationwide about the challenges, heartbreaks, joys, and lessons learned from one mother to another.
Welcome to the American Mother's Mom to Mom podcast. I am your host, Deanne Taylor. I am so happy that we have a chance to meet together every Tuesday at noon Eastern at the American Mothers Inc. Facebook page. Our goal is to bring topics and speakers that will help you navigate your motherhood journey and to support you as a busy mom. Today, I have another wonderful guest. I'm excited to visit with her. And this is Cynthia Melion. She was raised in Minnesota and lived in Mexico as a young adult for over a decade. She returned to Minnesota with three children in the early 1990s. Then she raised them as a single mom while living with mental illness. Now a mother to four adult children and a grandmother to five, Cynthia recently retired from a three-decade career as a Spanish medical interpreter to pursue her writing and develop other creative and healing gifts. Cynthia's memoir, The Girl Whose Heart Grew Fierce, How Love and Determination Saved My Life, is projected to be published in 2025. This memoir chronicles Cynthia's 30-year recovery journey from complex PTSD and explores themes of love, family, spiritual growth, and emotional sobriety. Cynthia, thank you for coming visit with me today on Mom to Mom. And I know our listeners are really interested in your journey and very supportive of your successful journey through those issues you've had. Thank you for joining me today.
Deanne, thank you so much. Thank you to you and to American Mothers for giving me the opportunity to have this conversation. Moms are near and dear to my heart. I have done many things in my lifetime. Being a mom, there are almost not enough words. That has been one of the most profound, life-changing, powerful activities and journeys. And it is still unfolding. My kids are now in their 30s, have children of their own, some of them, and still we learn and grow together. It's a never-ending process.
That is certainly true. I agree with you.
Give a shout out to all the moms out there who today are finding themselves in the trenches dealing with many, many challenges. And I know that as we move through time and the generations, the challenges that each one of us face in our particular time in history can be different. But I really do think, as women, as mothers, grandmothers, aunties, sisters, there are challenges that we have faced across millennia that are the same, which, when you're a parent, I heard it said once that being a mom is like having a part of your heart walking around outside your body. And when we are parents, we become so vulnerable because our children are out in the world and that's our heart walking around. And how do we navigate that, right? And how do we shepherd them through? I think I'd like to start today by just giving you a little bit, I'll try and be brief, kind of my background, my story.
I appreciate that because you and I have talked about that a little bit and I have not had to deal with what you've had to deal with, but I can empathize as much as possible. But I think there's a lot of women that we meet on our daily journeys that have at least a little bit of what you have had to experience. And if it'll help us as listeners gain some insight, how we can be more empathetic and more understanding by hearing your journey, we appreciate you being willing to share that with us.
Thank you so much for that support, Deanne. I think it's really one of the questions that you asked me when we connected a few weeks ago to talk about this is what can people do, right? How can I be of help? And I think being a safe space, creating room for these conversations, and being open to the idea that women's experiences are so varied, right? What I may have grown up with maybe is not what you have grown up with. And creating space that we can make ourselves vulnerable, particularly about being less than perfect, right? So that we can honestly show up and share those pieces.
I think women feel like they have to be perfect, and
Absolutely.
that's where we get ourselves into trouble.
Absolutely. So I was born in the Bay Area in California, in Berkeley, in the late 1950s. And my parents were poor. My mom left my dad 4 months after I was born because she found evidence he had slept with his cousin and thought there was no problem. And so, as a young mom in the late 1950s, she was facing a divorce, and that was really brutal. I was raised for the next couple of years with my mom and my grandma. My mother remarried. My dad adopted me. We moved to Minnesota in the early 1960s. My dad got a job as a research chemist with 3M, and so we became a Midwestern family. I grew up in the Twin Cities, pretty unremarkable. There were some problems with my childhood. I will say it was pretty uneven parenting, maybe dysfunctional. But it wasn't evident to me at the time. You know, we all grow up with our family and our home, and that's what normal feels like to us. And we don't necessarily have a sense until we go away and come back. What that was. You're just in the soup of it, right?
Right.
So a dramatic thing happened to me when I was 15, and that was that I went on an exchange program in my high school to Mexico. We went for a month, we stayed with a family. There were 25 American kids that went down and did this. Then 3 months later, the same students from the families that hosted us came up and stayed in our homes. And I don't know, maybe some of your other listeners have this experience that they are just going through their life and then something happens, bam, and they find themselves in a location or a situation or an encounter that impacts them so deeply. It's like a watershed moment. Everything after that is different. And that was what happened to me. I went to Mexico for the first time when I was 15, and something changed in me. And that was the beginning of Mexico feeling like home. I had never been there before. I didn't have any Mexican ancestry. I hadn't grown up with, I don't know what it was, but I went back for college. And then I went back to be married. And I was there and I was married for 10 years. About the late 1980s, my 3.5-year-old daughter and I were kidnapped one evening after going grocery shopping. I thought it was a carjacking. And then we were taken to Mexico City. We were held there for some hours. We were very fortunate that we were not harmed physically and that we both got away with our lives. But it, as you can imagine, was extremely traumatic. That was within the context at that point, my marriage was already starting to crumble. And I want to say I stayed for a couple more years. Then there was evidence that my husband was having an affair. I took the kids to the States for the summer. I wrote him a note. I said, I'm separating. We had planned to leave and have a summer vacation. I brought the kids a couple days early. I said, if you want me to come back, you need to be faithful in our marriage and we need to have some changes. But I didn't tell my family that was going on. I landed with my dad and stepmom. And I spent the summer pretending to my kids and everybody else that we were on vacation. And
Wow.
the summer drew to a close, and I had to put my money where my mouth was and stay put because my husband wasn't responding, wasn't owning up to his piece, wasn't necessarily willing to make any changes. I felt like I had to stand my ground because if I went back, I would have no leverage to ask him to make these changes, right? If he wasn't going to change when I was away with the children, he wasn't going to change if I went back to that. So, in August 11th, I let my return tickets to Mexico expire and I experienced my first ever full-blown panic attack. My body knew that something really big was happening and changing. And I told my children that we were staying. They were devastated. They had a big extended family in Mexico, and my family in the US was did the best they could, and it was an extraordinary difference for my children. They weren't experiencing warm, fuzzy love they were used to. I enrolled my kids in school. The fall progressed. Around the anniversary of the kidnapping, I had a nervous breakdown and I had a psychotic break. I was hospitalized. I was unwelcome to come home. My dad and stepmom had my kids. They decided I should move to Minneapolis with my mom, who lived on her own. And I did. And I became excruciatingly depressed. I didn't have the thing that made my life worth living, which was my children. I was losing my marriage. I was losing my homeland. I was losing my faith. I had been a woman of deep, deep faith, did my devotions every day, my Bible readings, my prayers, my best girlfriends in Mexico were in a Bible study, and all the things that I used to do to support myself in that moment, I was in the midst of a deep spiritual crisis as well. So it was just devastating. And I became suicidal. I wrote a suicide note and carried it in my purse for 3 or 4 weeks. I had a plan, and I was just barely hanging on, trying to keep myself alive. I couldn't see a way forward and I couldn't see a way back. And my sister called me during that time. Actually, backtracking, I had a conversation with a therapist that I was seeing at that time. And I said, you know, I think I need to be in the hospital. I don't believe I told him how depressed I was. He didn't ask me if I was suicidal, which I was. So he really missed the boat on that one. He just basically said to me, ah, you've been to the hospital, you've seen what it is. I'm not so sure that you need that. And then I thought, well, if I can't go to the hospital, right? If they can't help me there, and my thinking is getting increasingly disturbed, and I can't focus, I'm just staring at walls. What if I go back to that psychotic place where I'm living in a nightmare all the time? I thought that was my future. I thought I was going to lose my mind and be in a state mental institution for the rest of my life.
That
And
is
yeah.
in that time of the society, that is kind of where you were. That's
Not.
the, I mean, that
Oh, that
was the
was the early
thinking.
90s. That
Yeah.
was the early
They
90s.
were
So I
tricking
don't
you a
know that
little
it was
bit.
realistic. I didn't understand enough about mental illness to know that there were other options, that that wasn't
Right.
necessarily the right trajectory. Bottom line, my sister called me and she said, Cynthia, you're not right. You need a second opinion. And so I called the therapy center and I asked to talk to a different therapist. And I went in and I went directly from the therapy session to the hospital. And I was hospitalized for maybe 3 weeks and got adequate care, was released to a women's transitional housing program where I lived for 4 months. I saw my children every day in the afternoon, but my
That's
dad
good.
stepmom had a rule. I needed to leave before supper time. They didn't like me to be there because, according to them, my kids were whiny and clingy when I was there. Well, of course they were. They were terrified.
Right.
They were terrified and unsupported and all these things. And I was their comfort and they could be who they were when I was there. That wasn't permissible. So that was that. 4 months later, I was able to get a supportive rent situation. Rent an apartment, be reunited with my kids. I spent a year going to day treatment, getting major support. I spent a decade as a single parent. Eventually, I was able to get back into the workforce. I had a new job as an interpreter. I was able to work for an agency and be home most of the time when the kids were home. We were poor. I had to supplement with welfare for some time and food stamps. And there's a lot of shame that goes along with that. And a lot of it's hard on so many levels, right?
Right.
And I was also aware that because of my ongoing depression and anxiety, my particular nervous system, and at some point they did finally diagnosed me as having PTSD, which all of us thought was because of the kidnapping, right? That's a
Right.
great PT trauma. So you think, oh, sure, that's where it all started.
That makes sense.
And it wasn't until I was in therapy for well over a decade, maybe 2 decades, that one of my therapists read something I wrote and she introduced me to the concept of complex PTSD. Some people call it childhood PTSD,
Oh.
which is it's a diagnosis upon a diagnosis, right? Complex PTSD occurs when children in particular are living in a situation where day after day after day, they feel emotionally unsafe. This happens when they are in a developmental stage and it impacts how their brain develops so that as adults, they may be more prone to addiction. They may be more prone to fits of rage or anxiety. Their nervous system was built, wired in a way that they get triggered very easily into old memories. And so they'll have shame come up or rage come up, and it's a newer understanding that this exists. And in my case, it was true. Not only was there the big T trauma of the kidnapping, not only had I left my entire support network, including my in-laws who were amazing, and my Bible study women, and my adopted culture, all of this behind. I had plopped myself into a toxic soup of family dysfunction and became completely dysregulated. So they're just like all these pieces. So here I am now in my mid-60s, and I want to say about a decade ago, I started writing. I've been writing my whole life. I've written letters and I've been a journaler since I was 10. I never really conceived of myself as a writer until a decade or so ago. I started a travel blog. I went to Europe to visit two of my adult kids who were studying over there. And I started writing about my, this for me was not just a trip to Europe. It really was a spiritual pilgrimage. It was about
Right.
my kids are raised now. I'm not in the trenches. I'm not, fighting for financial security, for emotional security. Who am I, now that my kids are
Right.
And I started writing, and then I realized that I am a writer. I started to embrace that. I started a blog called Reluctant Methodist Mystic,
Oh, I
which
like
is
that name.
where I have kind of poured out my spiritual journey over the last decade. Just things happen, and I look at an event and I question my behavior, my attitudes, what does my faith, my belief system call me to do and grow and shape and move, all those things. Anyway, I started writing, and I started writing my story. And it's come in fits and spurts, and it took me a really long time. A friend of mine asked me last year, he said, "So, who are you writing this story for?" Because I think ultimately it will make it to the public, really the story is for myself. And it's a story to honor my 35-year-old self who struggled and suffered, and it's to give witness to her journey. And if I may, I'd like to share with you the preface, which talks about that. It would now be an okay moment to do that.
That sounds like a good way to summarize this podcast session.
Alrighty, here we are. On a sunny November evening in 1989, I was kidnapped in Puebla, Mexico, with my 3-year-old daughter and held captive overnight. 4 years later, in 1993, my marriage unraveled and I embarked on a return journey from Mexico to Minnesota with my 3 young children, hoping to save my marriage. Our family's story unfolds through several decades of trials, survival, and healing from mental illness. The little girl whose heart grew fierce chronicles this journey. It's a story of raising bilingual, bicultural children of color as a white single parent living in poverty, while questioning my place in the world, the deeper meaning of suffering and mental illness, and the shape and nature of the divine. I wrote this book to honor 35-year-old me, clutching her purse with a suicide note, struggling each day to keep herself alive, even though she knew that her life was over, that there was no hope, that there was no way forward. I am awestruck by her courage and her strength, her fortitude, her bravery, her resilience. I want to assure her that it will all work out in the end, that the bathroom step stool she fashioned during her first psychiatric hospital stay will go on to support the small feet of toddlers standing on tiptoe learning to brush their teeth. That she will live to see her children grown, each living a full, compassionate, meaningful life. That she will revel in the joy of being a grandmother. That she will feel more alive at 65 than she did in her mid-30s. I write in honor of her fierce heart, one that I share, the one that propelled us forward through more obstacles and challenges than I can count or name. Holds us back up to our wobbly feet when we had fallen yet again. And in doing so, I have written this book for you. You who are currently struggling, you who have no hope for your future and no obvious path forward, you who have lost a homeland or a home and feel your heart torn asunder, you who are leaving a marriage or were left behind. You who are living with and suffering from mental illness or are shepherding a loved one through theirs. You who have lost a loved one to suicide. You who grew up in a family that didn't see you, value you, or understand you, and shaped you with a hole in your heart where self-love should reside. You who are trying to understand who you are and why you are here. I see you. I see your suffering. And I promise you, contrary to the lies your brain is spinning, you are not a failure, worthless, or hopelessly beyond help. You are a human being who is going through a rough time. You may have made mistakes. You may have regrets. This is not a moral failure on your part. This is how we learn. It does not need to be a death sentence. Your deep suffering does not have to mean that this is the end of your life. Please be assured that you don't have to walk this path alone. There are many who are ready and waiting for you to reach out for help. Others who have walked this path before you. People who can hold a lamp high and show you a way forward when all you can see is the darkness that surrounds you everywhere you look. We will hold the light for you until you can see your way forward again. My hope is that in sharing my story, in making myself naked on the page, you can find hope as well and move forward step by tiny step to create a future more brilliant than anything you can possibly imagine in this moment. Hold on to your own fierce heart and let it lead the way.
Oh, that's beautiful, Cynthia. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And that's kind of a springboard to next week, I mean, 2 weeks, when Cynthia Malione will join me again. And she will share with us how she learned to become a more complete person during her journey and a better parent as she was guided on her parenting journey. Cynthia, thank you so much for joining us today on Mom to Mom Podcast and sharing your story. I know it is very personal to you, but I appreciate that you're willing to share it with so many others who will learn from you and take courage that they too could make it through that.
Thank you, Jan.
Forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
In our next episode of Mom to Mom, Cynthia Malione will share with us the rest of her journey as she found hope and moved forward to a brighter future. Be sure to join us on Mom to Mom next Tuesday at noon Eastern Time on American Mothers Inc. Facebook page. You'll always find something new on that page, so be sure and visit it often. We love connecting with you, and have a great week. And remember, you are awesome and we love you. Take care.
Thanks so much for listening to today's show. If you like what you heard, subscribe so you can get your weekly dose of mom-to-mom encouragement. We understand that being a mother can be overwhelming, but we hope that you found something useful you can apply to your own life. We invite you to share this episode with a friend who might also enjoy the message. The mission of American Mothers is to support mothers, empowering them to positively impact their families and communities. We want each one of you to discover and share your innate, inherent, and natural abilities to bless your children and others.
The primary purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. The views, information, or opinions expressed during the American Mothers Mom to Mom podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of American Mothers Incorporated, its members, or employees. AMI is not responsible for, nor does it verify the accuracy of the information contained in the podcast, nor does the series constitute any professional advice or services. We look forward to visiting with you one mom to another next week. Until then, just do your best at mothering, and remember, you're not alone. You've got an army of mothers all around you, cheering you on.